Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Is home care versus nursing home care even an option? Should it be? Coming up later, NPR's Joseph Shapiro will join us to talk about his recent series on the civil rights of long-term care for seniors and people who are disabled. Right now, we're going to talk about the possibilities for home care in Central Ohio. Joining us is Chuck Gehring. He's president and CEO of Life Care Alliance. That's the organization that provides Meals on Wheels and much, much more. The larger goal there is to help people remain independent in their own homes or wherever they want to be in the community. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Thanks for having us.
Also with us is Patty Callahan. Patty is a caregiver advocate for the National Family Caregiver Support Program of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. She is a licensed independent social worker in Ohio who has provided services in many local settings, including the OSU Medical Center, the Columbus AIDS Task Force, and Hospice of Central Ohio. Welcome to the show, Patty.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Chuck, Life Care Alliance is one of the largest nonprofits in Central Ohio. What does that say about the demand for your sorts of services?
Well, the demand is huge, and people want to stay in their own home. I still haven't found the client, Ann, that has checked the box on the survey that says I would rather be in a nursing home. Sometimes they have to go, but not often. And people especially have been educated the past few years on options, and they want to do everything they can to stay in their own home. Now, the demand, though, if you look at things like the Scripps Gerontology Institute's website at Miami University here in this state, It notes that we're going to have at least double the number of seniors 10 years from now that we do today in Central Ohio, just because of the demographics and people are moving in, not moving out of Central Ohio, and with the baby boomers. So it's going to be a huge issue. And I think the last thing I'd say to you is the economy's gotten this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
With the economy, some people are struggling a little more and need a little more help. About 70% of our clients live on under $600 a month income. And what that is, it's an old Social Security check. And I've had people say, oh, you must take care of all the indigent people and the homeless people. And we do some of that. But my mom, who's 86 years old, gets $550 a month from Social Security. Now, she has me and some other supports, but many people don't. And if you don't, just think about trying to pay your bills this time of year, paying your heating bill, your electric bill, things like that, plus a couple of medications, plus food. The $550 runs out pretty quickly, and there just aren't a lot of options.
You've been lauded for turning around Life Care Alliance and all of that. One of the things especially is just the outreach you've done to get people educated about what is out there and what their opportunities are. How much does that involve what you do now?
I think quite a bit. It has for a long time. I've been there almost 10 years.
Right.
And this generation that we're talking about, the current people who are senior age, oftentimes they look at services by anybody as welfare. They'll say, gee, I don't need that. I was taught to take care of myself. And, gee, it's some sort of benefit that I was taught. I never want to be on, you know, public assistance or something like that. But this is a little different. And the fact of the matter is that if we can keep them independent in their own home, where 100% of them want to be, we save huge tax dollars. AARP calculates that we save over $55,000 per person per year for each person we keep independent in their own home. Because, again, for this population, their alternative is not to go to a fancy senior residence that averages $5,000 a month now per person in Central Ohio.
Right.
That's not their alternative. Their alternative is to go into a governmentally paid for building, which seldom people want to be in, number one. And number two, it costs the taxpayers an extra $55,000 a year. So everybody wins with home care. But we're very fortunate here in Central Ohio to have the system that we have. As you get into some of the more rural counties around here, there are not as many services. So a lot depends on your position, where you are, things like that. But like I said, this group, sometimes we find a lot of times with the folks, even if we're just doing something basic like Meals on Wheels once a day for them, that they'll say, gee, that's for old people, or that's for people that don't have any money. Well, they quickly realize that, in this economy, it becomes very difficult to maintain, like I said, without some sort of, just paying your property taxes this time of year. It's because these people are in their own homes. And while they don't have a house payment, they've got, again, utility bills, property taxes, things like that. Money runs out pretty quick.
You're listening to Chuck Gehring. He's president and CEO of Life Care Alliance. Also joining us, Patty Callahan. She's a caregiver advocate for the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. If you have a story, if you've been dealing with these kinds of issues, the question of whether to go to a nursing home or not, and how you've managed to stay out, or any questions, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Patty, how do you know? I mean, nursing homes are there for a reason. Now, I know there's a historical evolution or devolution, or however you want to look at it, that led to nursing homes. They didn't sprout up miraculously 100 years ago. That was a part of a history. But what are they really meant for now, and how do you know if you're a candidate for a nursing home?
Well, I think the shift now is to more rehabilitative short-term stays in nursing facilities so that somebody can get more enhanced services, intense services in terms of therapy and nursing, and then get back on their feet and then get back home. That's the shift, at least, that we're gradually seeing. We're not completely there yet by any means. But that's kind of where we are now. It's a shift away from this being an actual permanent residence situation.
Some people, though, will never be rehabilitated. They'll
Correct.
Never get out of bed again.
Right.
They can't. And even then, they don't necessarily have a home to go to where even you'd have to have 24/7 care.
Exactly. Yeah. There are definitely people who we still are going to need nursing facility care for when 24-hour care is needed, no question. If there isn't a primary caregiver in the home that can pick up some of that care, then they have their place, absolutely, for those types of situations. We can, however, keep some very frail people with a lot of needs safely in their homes and do it very well, and where that's where they really prefer to be.
In a practical sense, there are thousands of people waiting
yes.
for just that scenario. The
yes.
state can't afford to make the transition. What's the problem? If it's cheaper to do it, why isn't the state doing it?
Well, I think that's a really good question. We have made the case over and over that we can keep someone safely in their homes for about a third of the cost of what a nursing home would cost for that individual in mm-hmm. a year. And I'm not really sure where the hang up is exactly. I think it's just an old bias, a system that was skewed toward Medicaid paying for the nursing home rather than home and community based services.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation. We're talking about the question of, is a nursing home right for you, or is home care more appropriate, or some combination of the two? Give us a call if you have a story to tell, 614-292-8513. Patty, which home care programs now have the greatest demand? There's all different kinds of programs out there. Why don't you describe some of them to us and tell us,
sure.
what are the big ones?
Well, the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, along with all the area agencies on aging in Ohio, are the entry point for the state Medicaid waiver program, Passport, and it's a very popular program. It provides an array of services that are intended to be an alternative to nursing home placement for someone who needs a higher level of care on a daily basis, and this is an alternative to nursing home care. Mm-hmm. And the services are a range of services. They're care managed by professionals, nurses and social workers. They range from things like home delivered meals to personal care assistance, homemaker services. We can even set up emergency response systems. The program can also pay for adult day services for an individual to go out of the home to a center for all or part of the day and receive their care. That's a service that a lot of caregivers don't realize exists and can actually help an employed caregiver remain in the workforce rather than have to quit their job to provide care, because that can cover the hours, typically the work hours of an 8-to-5 type job for a lot of caregivers. And then they can come home and assist their loved one at night. So, again, it's all a very individualized care planning that is provided under that program. Again, with the intent of giving someone an opportunity to stay at home.
Do you coordinate with organizations like Life Care Alliance?
Absolutely. Yes, they are one of the providers for this program.
So you just sort of work in tandem then, Chuck?
Yeah,
right?
We actually do the work in the field. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely. We make all the meals from scratch, which is not always the case in all cities. For example, Cincinnati today, as a comparison, buys all their meals, and they have the option of one meal. We make all the meals in order to control fat, sodium, and sugar content, provide a choice of diet choice. We can do any kind of diet you want and things like that, and that's very important.
So that gives you a lot of, at the Area Agency on Aging, a lot of latitude then. You have this organization out there that's filling this need because you can't tell people, well, stay home, but we can't guarantee you'll get proper meals. We can't guarantee you'll have a proper diet. Now you can.
Right. We are very fortunate, as Chuck said earlier, in this area to have a wealth of services and provider organizations in this community. In some areas, that's not the case by any means, but we are certainly fortunate here, and our waiting lists have dropped for the programs, and so we are able to accommodate people on a more timely basis.
Chuck mentioned something earlier, geography. That's not a problem in Central Ohio, but, you know, around the state, how does the rest of the state cope, particularly in the rural areas? There's transportation problems. Do they have a chance?
Yes, there definitely is a challenge in those areas, and some services simply don't exist. Some programs, the hope is with some programs that we can provide some individuals that are self-employed maybe to fill some gaps in those areas. But the rural areas are tough, and transportation is a big, big gap in many areas, probably the number one need and the number one underfunded need for service.
Angie, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm calling because my grandma is 82 years old, and she is currently going blind with the wet macular degenerate, and she is going losing her mind somewhat. And I was wondering what services are available to her.
Oh, all kinds of things. Is she in the Central Ohio region, or where does she live at?
She's in Sailor Park.
In where?
Sailor Park. It's in Cincinnati, but it's...
Oh. Okay, well, Cincinnati, every city's a little different, but they should have similar services. There are Meals on Wheels in Cincinnati. There are Homemakers in Cincinnati. Homemakers, a person that comes in and cooks and cleans. And these services, based on income qualification, can be free to her. And generally, if her income is only Social Security or something like that, they would end up being free services oftentimes. But there is some variance there. But they're oftentimes free services. And then there's also all kinds of things available to her. We here in Columbus actually pick people up on vans, bring them into dining centers so that they can have socialization, things like that. They're generally nursing services, generally home health aide services. Home health aide is a licensed person who comes in and bathes, helps with personal care type things, and nurses can actually come to the home and work with them. Now, some of these services that I described, depending on the area, and I'm not totally up on Cincinnati today, there are some fees for that. But I would call, if you call to Cincinnati, you call their Area Agency on Aging. And you can look on the web under Area Agencies on Aging. You'll find them. You click on the part of the state where she's at and then call them, and they'll fill you in as far as all the kind of services that are available in the area.
Okay.
Sounds like your grandma's lucky to have you looking out for her, Angie.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you for your help, and you guys have a great day.
You do. Wait, Angie, hang on a second.
Angie, I just wanted to let you know, too, there are also sometimes services in communities that can help people with visual impairments, and they can come into the home and actually bring a lot of adaptive equipment into the home to help her just maximize what vision she might have still and help her function a little better in the home setting. The Area Agency on Aging in Cincinnati hopefully can point you toward that, too. That kind of a service as well. And a lot of those services are also free.
I took her to the Blind Institute already.
Great. Wonderful.
All right, Angie, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care. We're going to have to take a quick break. We'll return and continue our discussion about options for folks who want to stay home or stay home as much as possible when they become disabled or become too elderly. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to join the conversation, we'll be right back. This is All Sides on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Beginning this Thursday, January 6th, 89.7 FM will become your all-day NPR news station, and you can hear your favorite shows.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I'm Neil Conan, and this is Talk of the Nation.
Listen to 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, beginning this Thursday, January 6th.
And it's 36 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:21 this morning. Sunny skies today, a high rate around 38 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight and a little chilly, a low of 17. Some sunshine again for Wednesday, a high of 33. The low Wednesday night will be 22 degrees with cloudy skies. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guests, Patty Callahan. She is a caregiver advocate for the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. And also Chuck Gehring. He is the president and CEO of Life Care Alliance. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about local options for folks in the Central Ohio area. If you have a question or comment, we gladly take them. So 614-292-8513 for that. Let's talk about those, why the state hasn't been able to transition from the old way of doing things, pretty much warehousing people and segregating them in nursing homes for just about anything, versus transitioning them to more home care. Chuck, you wanted to talk about that some.
Well, the state, first, Ann, has made that transition, and the state very much wants to push home care. There's no question, because of the cost and because that's what the client wants. So everybody wins in this situation. They are a little hamstrung in that, because the state funding, not the federal, county, or city funding, just the state funding through the Passport program, has something called recapture, which means that when the client passes away, the state then can, and this is a federal requirement made on the state can then recapture the costs of the services provided to them. Well, you can imagine as you start adding things up, they might value a meal on wheel at $6 or $7 a meal. Certainly, it doesn't cost us quite that much to send it out, but they valued it. That adds up quickly,
but
over 365 days a year.
If it's coming from Meals on Wheels, the state's not actually paying for it, right, or are they?
Well, if it comes from Meals on Wheels and it's a Passport client,
okay,
then the state
is
paying for it through Passport,
okay,
absolutely. And if they qualify for Passport, the program that Patty talked about, then they can get home care. The state absolutely positively, without reserve, wants to go more home care. In fact, Armin Budish, the recent Speaker of the House of Representatives, mm-hmm, wrote a book on this 15 years ago, about the economics of it, plus how they like it. But the problem is when the client dies, they recapture the cost. So if you go to a client today, and if the state was sitting here, they'd say, hey, we've got some excess Passport units. Well, the reason you have them, to me, and this is just Chuck's opinion, but the reason you have them is when you go to an elderly person and say, by the way, after we give you these services, the state can recapture the cost. So the house that you thought you were going to give to your kids can be sold, and some of the cost of that can go to the state. What do you think they say? 100% of the time, it's no way. They don't want to do it. So we've seen that over and over. So there are people that take a chance on that and go with Passport, but it limits others. And I shouldn't say 100% of the time, but that's wrong. But it limits others from being part of this. So the feds really need to take that straitjacket, so to speak, off the state and allow them to do that.
Okay.
My opinion.
Okay.
There are a lot of misconceptions, too, that, you know, we do try to explain estate recovery, the recapture that Chuck was talking about up front when we go out and meet with individuals who are interested in the program. There are a lot of misconceptions that you immediately hand over the house when you go on to Passport. Well, you don't do that. And actually, this estate recovery can come into effect for anybody, whether it's home care under Passport or whether you're 55 and receiving Medicaid services just for health care. So we try to explain, you know, how this works, and that the intent is still to keep them in their home as long as possible, that their spouse can stay in that home as long as they live, and that nobody's at least going to walk you know, walk them out of that house to go on passport. You know, also, there are some exceptions where the state will waive this estate recovery, too, and we like to let them know about that. And then we also early on try to capture people when they are planning for long-term care and have some room still to make some decisions up front, do some financial planning, some legal planning, and let them know, you know, what these requirements are. People aren't getting information early enough to make good, solid decisions, and they're being stuck right in the middle of a crisis where they really don't have the information they need to make good financial decisions around long-term care.
Correct. People really need to think about this when they're 40, 50, 60 years old.
Absolutely.
And really get plans in place, at least get the powers of attorney, things like that, medical powers of attorney in place. So, you know, it's still estimated, Ann, that half the people in Franklin County don't have a basic will. So, I mean, it's just something that needs to be done. You can get most of these documents off the state attorney general's website and just fill them out in your house yourself for free. And it's something that everybody listening should be thinking about and getting it done. And it's just planning for the future.
Yeah, any of us can really be subject to an injury or illness at any point. And who's going to pay the bills if you're not able to? Who is going to make your medical decisions for you if you're not able to say what you want? And you know, these are things that we really try to encourage people to take a hard look at, and also to communicate their preferences to whoever they designate as their decision maker. Because a lot of times, and what research tells us, is that frequently what the individual who has been granted that authority thinks the individual that they're representing would want isn't really the case, and that communication piece beyond those documents is extremely vital. We really refer to this as advanced care planning for incapacity, because honestly, making your wishes known to everyone, your health care providers, your family, is just so vital in making sure that you get the care you want where you want it.
You're listening to All Sides on WOSU 820. My guests are Patty Callahan of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging and also Chuck Gehring of the Life Care Alliance. 614-292-8513 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Elizabeth, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Yep, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. My new husband and I are caring for my 88-year-old disabled late husband's mother in our home, and have been so since April. It's getting so much worse. She's oxygen dependent 24/7 and depends on somebody to assist her with walking. We can take her to the grocery or to the doctor's with a lot of assistance, wheelchairs and oxygen and all this. The big issue we have is that we have no support at home because there's no family to help us. And it has been a challenge for us because we cannot go anywhere together. We have given up any couples activities since spring, and wondered, are there any services available? She is not passport
eligible,
yes, because she is not Medicaid. She had home health for a short time after she got out of the hospital in April, but met the goals, and we were able to care for her, so they have discharged her. And wondered, are there any services out there that we could utilize to give us a little bit of relief?
You know,
absolutely.
All of the services that are available under Passport are out there, fee-for-service, private pay in the community. And we can direct you to those services. Actually, on our website, we've put together a guide for families who are in your situation where there may not be eligibility for the publicly funded programs. And it lists the actual provider organizations that we contract with for the Passport program.
Is it on a sliding fee? Because just because you're not eligible for the Passport or the Medicaid waivers doesn't mean you're rolling in dough.
Well, in Ohio, too, is a little unique in that we fund a lot of our senior services through tax levies in the various counties. Franklin County, I'm not sure what county you are in.
Not yet.
Fayette. Okay, that's the one county in our service area that does not have a tax levy program for senior services, but there are other sources of funding down there, too, through the Family Caregiver Program and also Title III of the Older Americans Act. Also, the widows of veterans are eligible for some long-term care benefits, so sometimes that's an option to look at as well.
Through VA?
Through the VA. There's a program called Aid in Attendance, and we can help you get more information on that through the Area Agency on Aging, or you can go to your Veterans Service Commission. Every county in Ohio has a Veterans Service Commission that can walk you through the application process for those benefits.
There are some, and don't always assume, you know, in Central Ohio, there are certainly fee-for-service, but there are also some that she would qualify for. It's based on your mom's income or your mother-in-law's income, not your income, okay?
Right.
And that's a key point here. And there are certainly services that I think she might qualify for. Plus, there's a number of services done where people qualify for very easily, such as Meals on Wheels. It could bring in meals for her and check on her during the day. Can I ask where in Fayette you live?
In Washington Courthouse.
Okay. Do they have any daycare out there? You know, a very popular...
Well,
there isn't a daycare in Fayette County, which is an issue, and because that's the best way for relief is to be able to... have one of those fine groups that we have here in the Franklin County area actually come in, pick her up, take her in, spend the day with her, activities, programming, all kinds of fun stuff. They eat, they do everything, and then they take them back later in the day, and that's a wonderful situation. So depending on how much... I'm not telling you to move to Franklin County, but move to Franklin County. No, it's just that please understand there's nothing against Fayette. They just have less funding,
and
they don't have a levy, and it becomes – and they don't have the base of population, so it becomes a little more difficult for these types of services. But maybe, too, the other thing that's out there is just some people get somebody that they pay a small amount of money to come in and visit every day.
Right.
And there are some programs like that 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 are not the high-end. You know, if you bring in a home health care person, you're probably looking at somewhere between $20 and $24 an hour.
Right. Yeah.
But there are other people that you could hire privately that might come in and sit with her for far less than that.
I thank you, Elizabeth, for your call.
Thank you.
Because I did want to get into some issues. Patty, the Ohio General Assembly is to vote later this month on a rule change needed to permit Medicaid dollars to pay for independent caregivers.
Right.
Ohio, independent meaning they're self-employed.
Correct.
Ohio has piloted this option in four communities, including Central Ohio. Can you tell us how that pilot program worked? And
sure. It has been very successful. The program, actually, Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging designed this program 10 years ago, so we've had a lot of years to lay some groundwork here and see what the outcomes are for folks. The program is called Choices. It's an offshoot of the Passport program. We've always can refer to it as consumer-directed care. And basically by that we mean that the case managers for Passport are still very much involved with this and overseeing the entire care plan. But they also in this program actually train the consumer or their family member, if the consumer isn't able, to actually manage the care that's coming into the home from a business aspect. And they are able to negotiate some of the cost with their actual caregivers and work with them on times and that sort of thing and when they're coming. It's been I believe the figures are between 5-7% of the individuals that we come through our agency that would qualify for this program that have been offered it, you know, take it. It's primarily been useful for people living in rural areas where services aren't as readily available, in high-need situations where a caregiver might have to give up work and actually provide care. This can actually kind of allow them to cut back hours or whatever and stay home and supplement other services that their loved one might be getting through Passport, because it's a combination of the self-employed services as well, or self-employed provider services as well as the Passport services.
How do you make sure that unscrupulous people don't exploit people who need this program? What kind of oversight is that? That's been the big criticism is right. How do you keep track? The foster child programs can barely manage.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a challenge. There has been an organization hired to do the background checks on the folks that will be providing the care in this program. Mm-hmm. I think some of this, I'm actually not involved to the level of knowing all of the specifics mm-hmm. on the safeguards that are going to be put in place, but I know that these are things they're working on right now.
Okay. Brenda, you're on the air. You want to put in a pitch for nursing homes.
Well, yes, I find this conversation a little frighteningly one-sided. I think that nursing homes can be a wonderful resource if they are well-funded and preferably nonprofit. I think they can be a nurturing place for seniors and an immense relief to caregivers for people who really mm-hmm. can't be cared for at home. Right. And I'm scared that this forced transition is going to diminish funding to nursing homes and make the care worse there, having elderly people there suffer more.
Mm-hmm. You know, we made the point at the outset, Brenda, that nursing homes play a really important role. Mm-hmm. But could we go too far the other way, I guess, is what Brenda's worried about, and eliminate that option for people who really do need it?
I don't think that's ever going to happen. Mm-hmm. The nursing homes are there. They serve a purpose. But again, until people are in that care level where dementia has taken over their lives and they can wander and they just can't physically take care of themselves, people want to stay in their homes. And then at that point in time, they have to go to a facility oftentimes that can take care of them 24 hours a day because there's a lot of people out there. I got to be honest with you. We have 15,000 active clients at our agency. A lot of them don't have anybody in the area to take care of them, like Elizabeth taking care of her mother-in-law in Fayette County who called in. That's the exception, not the rule. And a lot of these folks don't have anybody to take care of them. And if they don't, and they become, they get to a certain level of care needed, then they have to go there.
So, but that doesn't mean that they should be there.
It doesn't mean they should be there. I mean, that's why it's important to have somebody that helps you.
Okay.
Somebody who can be your POA, your power of attorney, or your caregiver.
An advocate.
And maybe just an advocate. Maybe they're not bathing you or watching you 24 hours a day or feeding you. They're just trying to help you through the process. And if we can get to that point, then that's the way it is. And, I mean, we have a number of clients who are kept in their homes with our services for a period of years. Then they're forced to transition to another living environment because they're – for whatever reason. And we talked about earlier, you'd mentioned earlier about they can't get out of bed or whatever it mm-hmm. might be. The other half of it is the widespread dementia issue that right. we have all there. And, you know, if you can't know where you are, if you don't know where you are, if you can't take care of yourself mentally, then, you know, something's got to happen. And sometimes even staying in your own home at that time with a caregiver is impossible because you can't physically watch somebody 24 hours a day.
Brenda, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. We have to end this conversation and move on. I want to thank my guest, Patty Callahan of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. Thanks for joining us today, Patty.
Thank you.
And also Chuck Gehring. He is president and CEO of Life Care Alliance. Chuck, nice to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for getting the word out, Anne.
Yes.
Coming up in a few minutes, Joseph Shapiro. He's an investigative correspondent for NPR News, and in a recent occasional series, he's been reporting on how the issue of home care has become one of civil rights. He'll be right with us. Stay tuned. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, how the CIA penetrated the nuclear trafficking network of AQ Khan and waited too long to shut it down. Journalist Douglas Fran says the CIA was so obsessed with getting information that it stood by while Khan and his confederates spread dangerous nuclear technology around the globe. Fran co-wrote the new book Fallout. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And WOSU Public Media is excited to announce that beginning this Thursday, January 6th, All Sides with Ann Fisher will be on the new 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station. Every day, All Sides discusses the issues you are talking about, and now you can join the conversation on 89.7 FM. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher from 10 a.m. until noon every day on the new 89.7 NPR News, beginning this Thursday, January 6th. It's currently 36 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, a high of 38. Partly cloudy tonight and a little chilly, a low of 17 degrees. Sunshine again for Wednesday, a high of 33. Clouds Wednesday night and a low of 22. And there's a slight chance of a little snow for Thursday, partly sunny, a high of 32 degrees. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides. Joining us now, Joseph Shapiro. He's an investigative correspondent for NPR News and an occasional series on NPR. Joe has been reporting on how the issue of home care has become one of civil rights. He's with us today to talk about that. Welcome to the show, Joseph.
Thanks, Ann.
Last month, you told the story of Rosa Hendricks, who lives in a nursing home across the street from Martin Luther King Jr.'s gravesite in Atlanta. She doesn't want to live there, but she must because there aren't the programs available for her to live at home. Her circumstances compared to segregation in that story, and her lawyer says that it's a civil rights issue.
Right. Rosa Hendricks is 87 years old. She has very mild disabilities. She could live on her own at home. She can bathe herself, feed herself. She can do everything except that she uses a wheelchair and she propels herself in the wheelchair with her one strong leg. And her story is sort of typical. She ended up in this nursing home. She went, she fell. She needed some rehab. Her Social Security check, which was her only income, then went to pay for the nursing home, and she could no longer pay the rent on her apartment. So when the nursing home stay and the rehab stay took longer than expected, suddenly she couldn't pay for her apartment. She lost it. She had no place to go. She basically became homeless, and she became a longtime resident of this nursing home, and they're not the programs in Georgia, enough of them to get her out. She's been stuck. She wants to get out. And you mentioned her lawyer. There's been sort of a quiet revolution in the way elderly and young people with disabilities get their long-term health care. And a new legal right has emerged that says this is a civil rights issue to have a choice. Do we get our long-term care at home or in an institution?
How does seeing it as a civil rights issue change the playing field now?
It changes it in a lot of ways. It gives it says that people should have choice and have a right to have this choice, and it's a right that's been established in law going back some 20 years in the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is the act that prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities, signed by President George H.W. Bush in 1990. And there was a Supreme Court decision then 11 years ago that interpreted the ADA to say that the unnecessary institutionalization of people amounts to discrimination. That decision was 11 years ago, as I said, but it really wasn't enforced. And but the Justice Department under President Obama has begun to enforce that Olmstead ruling and tell states that they have an obligation to create adequate programs so that people do have more choice and have choice to get the services they need to live at home.
States vary widely in the portion of Medicaid spending they devote to serving the elderly and people who are disabled in their communities rather than in nursing homes. In Ohio, it's 24%. In Minnesota, it's 58%, for example. Why such a great difference?
Part of it depends on how long they've been trying to do community-based care. Minnesota, Oregon, Washington State are some that have been trying to move people out of nursing homes and into smaller group homes, assisted living, home-based care programs. They've been doing it for a couple of decades now. Other states have been slower to do this, so Ohio being one of them. So it's taken more time. The government, the Bush administration, in 2007 started a program called Money Follows the Person. You have that in Ohio, and it's a program to provide funding to help people make the transition from a nursing home to home. I wrote about a young man actually in Georgia where he was a young man. He was 21 years old trying to get out of a nursing home, and he used this Money Follows the Person program to renovate his mother's house. The state came in, used this Money Follows the Person funding to renovate the bathrooms so it would accommodate his wheelchair. They even spent money to put a sidewalk outside the house so that he could move from the family van, into his house.
That's one example. Most examples are of people moving into accessible apartments and places that are fit for them at the outset, and that there's a big shortage of housing for people who have disabilities and older people who need special accommodations.
Right, and I mean that's one of the biggest problems, that there isn't that much of this housing. It's very hard to find. It's actually the reason why Rosa Hendricks in Atlanta is having so much trouble getting out of the nursing home. She can't find a place that's accessible. So once you need a wheelchair, you need an apartment, a place that you can get around that has an accessible shower that doesn't have lots of steps at the front door. And those are hard to find. There's a shortage of them in this country. And housing is expensive. So it's often the biggest barrier is that accessible housing.
You reported, Joseph, over the past decade, states have steadily increased spending on home-based care, but that the number of people on waiting lists has more than doubled, and that there are now 400,000 people across the country waiting to get into home-based care. A lot of that has to do with that inadequate stock, but on the other side of the equation, that number is going to increase exponentially over the next 20 years.
Yes, and part of that is something that's the result of something that is called Medicaid's institutional bias, that nursing home care is an entitlement. States are required to provide a nursing home care. There can't be waiting lists for people who need to be in a nursing home, but home-based care is not an entitlement. So states can have waiting lists for people who want their care at home. And in 10 years, the number of people on the waiting list has doubled, as you mentioned, 400,000 around the country. So there are a lot of people who are trying to get out of nursing homes, or maybe they're at home now and their care is falling apart, but they can't get the care they need to be at home. So it requires states to spend more on home-based care, to provide more of that accessible housing. But there's an upfront cost, and states are dealing with the biggest budget deficits ever. So it's a real leap of faith for states. There is evidence that when you go to home-based care, that states save money, but it's saving the money over the long term. It costs, there was an AARP study that I cited that said that providing care for people at home costs about a third of the cost of care in a nursing home, probably because it's more tailored to the person at home, that often you don't need 24-hour care. Mm-hmm. But to set up that home-based care, it takes an upfront cost, and states don't have a lot of money, and they're worried about doing it.
My guest is Joseph Shapiro. He's an NPR investigations correspondent. We're talking about his recent occasional series on the issue of home care versus as a civil right versus nursing home care. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Kathleen. She writes, I have heard that the nursing home associations and lobbies contribute a great deal of money to political campaigns. Is anyone suspicious that this practice has impeded legislation for at-home care? Is that the case? Do they have that much power to do that over the years?
They're often powerful at the state level, but I should point out that the nursing home lobby actually supports home-based care in many circumstances. They're not blocking it, partly because as home-based care becomes more of an option, more of those providers who own nursing homes are getting into the home-based care business. So I think there's often a suspicion and an accusation that that the nursing home industry is blocking, is always blocking state efforts to expand home-based care. And there are cases of that, but I think it's more complicated. It's not that simple. It's a mixed thing. They support it mm-hmm. when they say it's appropriate, and some of their businesses are going into this home-based care, so they do want to see it expand.
It seems like it's the same problem all across the board. It's that transitional phase that we want to go through, getting people out, getting them into the right places. And you mentioned that states are facing the biggest budget crises really ever. $8 billion shortfall in Ohio, estimated $8 billion shortfall. What are the expectations that this kind of transition is going to occur anytime soon?
Well, it has been occurring, actually. 11 years ago, the Supreme Court made its Olmstead decision that said people who get their care through Medicaid should have a right to get that care at home. And at the time, states were spending about 25% of their Medicaid long-term care budgets for the elderly and disabled on home-based care, and that's up to 64%. So that's over 11 years. That's fairly significant, and that's a start. Actually, I should say the comparison was 24% and 36%. It went from 24 to 36. That's an increase, so it's rising steadily, and there is more pressure now from these lawsuits that are being filed, the court precedents, and the effort from the Department of Justice to keep the states doing this.
The Department of Justice, a lot of that effort depends on the fact that the whoever's in the administration at the time running the Department of Justice, I know there's the head of civil rights there that has made this a big campaign for the department. But what about when administrations change?
Well, we've had the change with the Obama administration. What the Justice Department had traditionally done was to put pressure on states to improve conditions at state institutions, mm-hmm. at nursing homes and mental hospitals. And what's changed with this new administration is that they're saying, well, that's one step, but we also have to put pressure on states to expand programs so that people have a choice, so that there's more money for alternatives to nursing homes. I think that because the law is pretty clear that states need to do this, that this will continue. This current administration is pursuing it aggressively. Another administration may not pursue it as aggressively, but I think that because of the law and the civil rights decisions that say there is this right to home-based care, that can't be reversed.
Rosa Hendricks, the 87-year-old lady that you reported about, and we talked about at the top of the segment, she has a very good lawyer. Working on her behalf. One of the budgets that are being cut, I know in Ohio and across the country, are budgets for lawyers for low-income people.
Right, and that's and Rosa Hendricks was fortunate to have this lawyer, Sue Jamison, who actually brought the original case that went to the Supreme Court.
The Olmstead case.
The Olmstead case, right, the original Olmstead case. So she was she's fortunate that she actually found such a lawyer, and they're hard to find. But for people who are interested in getting help, getting out of a nursing home, every state has Centers for Independent Living. You have those in Columbus. Those are groups run by people with disabilities that do advocacy and help other people with disabilities. There are also every state has a protection and advocacy agency, which is a public legal office that represents people with disabilities. So there are places that are dedicated to helping people get out of nursing homes if they are able to live on their own.
Joseph, you reported that the whole idea of living at home as a civil right has made many state Medicaid directors nervous. Why are they nervous about that?
They're nervous because of the cost. They're worried that it costs money to set these programs up. But I should say that not every Medicaid director feels that way. Mm-hmm. I went to the meeting in October of the state Medicaid directors, and from some states, the director from Massachusetts was talking about how they changed their system and they found that they could serve more people and give people what they wanted, and that it hadn't been as difficult a transition as people had thought. So on the whole, there's a lot of probably generally among Medicaid directors, there's fear of making this change, but there are also other Medicaid directors who will say, hey, we've done it, and it's working, and we get better care. We provide better care for people. We can save money, and we give people what they want.
How much of a difference does it make that so many young people are in nursing homes as well and are part of that chorus out there asking for different changes?
I think it makes the difference. I think it's been younger people with disabilities who have made this push, who've said, we don't want to be in institutions and in nursing homes. This morning I'm writing a obituary, something to talk about a man named Max Starkloff, who just died in St. Louis. He was 73 when he died last week, but he lived in a nursing home from the time he was 26 till he was 38. And the day he moved out of the nursing home, he did something he could never do in a nursing home. He got married, and he and his wife, Colleen, started an independent living center, which I mentioned before, these groups that advocate and help people with severe disabilities. Mm-hmm. And he was a pioneer of the independent living movement, and he helped people all over St. Louis to live at home, to find work, to lead regular lives. And so this independent living movement was started by young people like Max Starkloff, who was 38 in 1975, who wanted to get out of nursing homes. And then they often were the ones, they said, look, we know best how to make this work, to be independent. They figured it out themselves. They got, they raised money. They started organizations. They figured out how to find accessible apartments, how to make apartments accessible, how to deal with the social service system, how to find jobs, how to make an accommodation work at work, so that a person who was a quadriplegic like Max could use a computer. They figured it out themselves and then taught other disabled people and advocated for other disabled people. So, yeah, I think this is what we're talking about with older people like Rosa Hendricks, older people trying to get out of nursing homes, this new civil right to get out of a nursing home. It started with younger people with disabilities.
Okay, Joseph Shapiro, he's an investigations correspondent for NPR News, and we were just talking about his occasional series on the issue of home health care as a civil right. Joseph, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann.
Appreciate it. That's all the time we have for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.